Well, thank you, Sandy, for the interview. Just as an aside, I wondered if your name gave you an edge when you went for the sought-after job with the Desert Times. No, more seriously. David was in a desperate situation. We know from the book of Samuel that he wasn't alone. He had more than 600 people with him. But he must have felt very lonely. And he must also have felt very dispirited. After all, his own son, Absalom, was chasing after him, trying to kill him, and trying to usurp his throne. I don't know about you, but when I'm faced with a difficult situation, I immediately ask God to help me. But interestingly, David didn't do that. He went through a process of connecting with God. And by recording that in Psalm 63, he gives us a handbook showing us how we can engage with God and strengthen our relationship with him. So what did he do? Well, the first thing he did was to reflect and visualize. I've looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory. Now for Israelites, the sanctuary was the Holy of Holies. It was where they kept the Ark of the Covenant, and that signified where God was present. So David visualized himself being there. A visualization is something that comes naturally to us, doesn't it? It starts at a very early age. When I was very young, I was quite a handful. My parents would have said, that's a euphemism of all euphemisms. So you won't be surprised to hear that what my favorite books were the Just William series by Richmond Crompton. Now, those of you of the older vintage would remember Just William. And even that was many decades ago. I can still vividly remember visualizing being part of William's gang and joining him on his escapades. And it's what we do as adults often when we read a book, isn't it? We visualize. And it's also, visualization is an important part of sports people's toolkit. I was listening to a talk by Sir Andrew Strauss, the very successful England cricket captain. And he spoke about the importance of visualization in preparing for a match. And then it struck me again when I was watching the Olympics, and one of the commentators used exactly the same word when she was describing the Olympic women's high jump final. She spoke about how the Russian gold medalist visualized every step of her run-up up to the point of takeoff. That visualization is really powerful. And that's what David was doing. But it's easy to get stuck visualizing things. But David didn't get stuck there. He went on to the next stage, which was to praise. And praising is important for at least three reasons. Firstly, God is worthy to be praised. So David wrote in Psalm 48, the Lord is God, he is worthy to be praised. The second reason is that it brings us gently into God's presence, doesn't it? And that's why we see in a church service, Francis doesn't welcome us and then dive straight into the talk. We sing a song that brings us gently into the presence of God. And then thirdly, it's uplifting. When we're praising God, it's hard to be thinking of ourselves and our own situation. We think of God, and that is very uplifting. And that's what David was doing. He wrote in verse 3, my lips will praise you. And then in verse 5, my mouth praises you with joyful lips. He was praising God. But just as it's easy to get stuck in visualization, it's probably even easier to get stuck in praise. But again, David didn't do that. He didn't get stuck in praise. He moved on to meditate. He said, when I think of you on my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night. And meditation is focusing on something or thinking deeply about something for a period of time. Now, I must confess, I'm not really good at that. I start with good intentions, but then I get easily distracted. I think about my next tennis game or the things that are on my to-do list, and I quickly just lose it. But David didn't do that. He really focused on God. And when I was preparing for this talk, I was just reflecting on this, and again, the Olympics came to mind. And whatever the event, you watch the competitors, they are totally focused on what they're doing. In today's parlance, we would say they're in the zone. Nothing distracts them. And then that came home to me again when I was watching a BBC Proms a week or so ago. And the solo cellist was in the zone, totally immersed in the music. Nothing was going to distract him. In the Olympics, there weren't any spectators. In the Proms, there were a few thousand. But it didn't matter whether there were nobody there or lots of people there. They were totally in the zone. And that was what David was. So what does this mean for us today? Well, I believe that it's by recording this in Psalm 63, David gives us a very helpful handbook. Afrikaans is a very expressive language, and they've got some wonderfully expressive words. And one of them is raakpunt. The literal translation is touch point. But it's used in a different context. It's used in the context of developing a deep relationship, a deep connection with someone. And there's no single word in English that quite captures it. And what David was doing was that he was developing this raakpunt with God, this deep connection with God. And I believe that what Psalm 63 does is it shows us how we can develop that raakpunt with God. It shows us how we can engage with our three-in-one God in a way which both deepens and strengthens our relationship with Him. I'm now going to hand over to Charlene, who is going to tell us a bit more about Psalm 63 and is going to show us what it means to us in the 21st century, 3,000 years after it was written. Charlene.
Thanks, Mike. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the characteristics of someone who seeks after God. And we've identified three. So the first one is that the person has inner joy. David writes, "In the shadow of your wings, I will rejoice." You see, David's had a joy that was not circumstances. David's joy was based on God. He focused on God. And despite the fact that he was in a terrible situation, his world was falling apart, in fact, he focused on God. And in the same way, we need to put our focus on God and remember that that is where our inner joy comes from. For me personally, during the pandemic, I've been shielding and I haven't been able to see my family for nearly 2 years and my friends in South Africa. And that's been very difficult. But I need to remain focused on the fact that my inner joy comes from God. And the second characteristic of someone that seeks after God is that they have inner stability and strength in a crisis. Again, David writes, "Because you have been my help. Therefore, in the shadow of your wings, I will rejoice. My soul follows close behind you, and your right hand upholds me." That is very powerful. You see, God was David's joy. David chose to hide right in the wings, in the shadows. You can't get closer of God's wing. Just like a baby dove, imagine a little tiny chick. It nuzzles and snuggles right deep into the down feathers of the mother's wing, where it cannot get any closer. And that's what we need to do. And in the same way, David was so happy to have the power of God's right hand upholding and sustaining him. It could steady him and keep him calm in a crisis. And in that way, he found his inner strength and his stability from God. And we need to do exactly the same thing and seek earnestly after God. And then the third thing is that the person who seeks after God has an inner stability and balance. David writes very powerful words, verses 9 to 11. He says, "But those who seek to destroy my life, they shall go into the lower parts of the earth. They shall fall by the sword. They shall be a portion for jackals. But the king shall rejoice in God. Forevermore, those that swear by him shall rejoice." Beautiful words. You see, David was not consumed by getting even. No, he knew that God is just and that he would deal with the enemies fairly. David could act in a balanced way because he knew what he had. And at the end of the day, you know, he knew his calling. He knew he was the king, so he had an inner perspective and balance that we too can have. So this leads me to our second point, and that is, how can we become more Christ-like? Firstly, we need to be putting our love for God at the center of our relationship with him. David writes in verse 3, "Thy loving kindness is better than life." There's a very old song that went something like this. "Thy loving kindness is better than life." You remember that song? Remember? It's an old one. Yeah, Ruth, you remember it? Yes, beautiful. My partner in crime for singing over here. "Thy loving kindness, come on, Jackie Stewart, is better than life." Beautiful. So then David goes on to write and he says, "My soul follows close behind you. Your right hand upholds me." So what is the result of this? God puts our shoulders back, strengthens our feet. We can stand up straight. There's an old song in South Africa, "Stomach in, chest out." And we stand up tall because the Lord intervenes for us. We're relying on him. And so the converse is also true, by the way, where in verse 9 he says, "But those who seek to destroy my life, they will go to the lower parts of the earth." And that's that wilderness place that we don't want to go. But in context, David was in a wilderness. He was in a difficult place. And we sometimes find ourselves in that same place. And we can choose to own our lot and complain, or we can say, "No, I'm going to use this time to get close to God," which is exactly what David did. He chose to use that time and he placed his love for God right at the center of a really bad situation. So this is where we need to just allow God to tuck us under his wing, to just bring us into that place, those down feathers that are so soft and snuggly where we cannot get any closer to him. Okay, so then we come to our second point in how to become more Christ-like. And that is that we need to be spending consistent time alone with him. So David was under intense pressure fleeing from Absalom. And despite this, he did not neglect to make the Lord his priority. Same way, we need to make the Lord our priority. As Patrick said, we need to focus on God. We need to meditate, to read his word, to renew our spirits and our souls by being close in praise and worshiping him. And that takes me to our third point. And to become more Christ-like, what can I do? What can we do? We can integrate him into every area of our lives. Because remember that God is not the spoke in the wheel. No. He's the hub. He wants to be at the center of our lives. He wants to be integral to every decision we make, whether it's where am I going to buy my next house? What's my career? What am I going to study? My family, my relationships, my coronavirus pandemic lifestyle choices, my next travel destination. He wants to be and should be at the center of every decision that we make. And this helps us to become more and more Christ-like. See, David's kingdom was in disarray. David was in disarray. He was running for his life. It would almost be understandable if he forgot about the Lord temporarily. But no, he remained focused and kept God at the center of his life. In the King James Version, they say it very beautifully. It says, David was following hard after God. How powerful is that? He was following hard. God was not off limits to anything. The question, of course, is, are we following hard after Jesus? And then, how do I apply this to my life? Okay? How do we make this real? As Patrick said, this psalm is a meaty one. It's a great guide or a handbook on how to live our lives. There are many messages here. And despite David's challenges, he chose to reflect, meditate, and praise God. Now, Satan will come and try and tell us lies and deceive us and make us think no one cares about us. But we know that that is nonsense, right? So just as David was hiding out in the wilderness, sometimes we feel that we are in that wilderness and we're not quite sure what to do and we maybe dwindle and we maybe walk away and, you know, we're not quite sure how to handle the situation. And God wants us to come back. And he says, whoever comes to me, John 6:37, whoever comes to me, I will never cast out. Wow. Wow. So please come back. There is an old song, I love old songs. There is an old song that goes, "It is well with my soul," written by a British lawyer by the name of Horatio Spafford. It's an amazing story. I can tell you about it afterwards. But the song goes, "It is well with my soul. When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll. Whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul." So, can you say together with this author that it is well with your soul? You may say, "I'm actively serving," but I'm saying, no, that's not what I'm saying. How is it with you and God? I know if you feel that you may want to talk to our Vicar Francis, she would be delighted to speak to you. Thank you.